Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Lords of Limited. My name is Ben Warney, and joining me on the line, as always, Mr. Ethan, Principled Referee Sachs, which is what we're going to try to be today for Spider-Man / Through the Omen Paths 1.
And what does that mean to you, being a principled referee?
I think giving this a fair shake, because I don't know about you, but we early accessed, and pre-playing with the cards, I was like not super excited for the format. And then that opinion quickly plummeted after I had the cognitive dissonance of different card names and different arts on Arena, because I had not seen any of the Through the Omen Paths art or card names. And so having to try to pick two cards in like a minute when I wasn't recognizing them quickly was quite off-putting. And since then, I've gone on a steady uphill trajectory with this format and landed on, I think it's going to be fine to slightly better than fine.
Wow. High praise from being in the dumpster. I didn't have quite that sort of like rocky start. Like I found it slightly jarring, but it didn't bother me. I felt like I knew I was signing up for that with the new card names or whatever and the new art on Arena and on Magic Online. But yeah, I'm excited to get to pick your brain because I watched like a little bit of your stream on Wednesday, but we haven't talked really about our experiences with the format. And I will say one of the things that was I found nice about the pick two life, I think the timers for the picks hopefully will be made slightly longer by the time it goes live on Tuesday. Because like by the time you were getting to whatever pick 7-8 or 9-10, it was like, you better pick now.
Yeah.
This timer is acting like it's, you know, pick 13 in a regular draft.
But I will say the thing that was nice was once you knew the cards, I liked the pace of the draft. It was nice to have it like be forced to have enough tempo draft. So I would hope maybe later in the format they will be normal timers like they were during early access. As soon as I felt comfortable with the card names, it was a boon for sure.
That's what I was going to say is that it was nice that the drafts took like 10 minutes. And I did one, like my at-home pre-release, I do with three buddies of mine, and we usually do sealed. And I was like, let's do the pick two thing. I think sealed with this small set is going to feel terrible. Let's do the draft thing. And they, like, you know, I think one of them had listened to the Crash Course. Two of the other ones hadn't, like, seen the spoilers yet. It still went pretty fast. Like, you're looking at half the number of packs, and so it goes a lot quicker.
Well, half the number of packs, and you settle into your colors quicker, and then you don't have to read all of the cards once you've settled into your colors. Yeah, I will say pick two draft, as much as I am worried about, like, minorly the future of Magic, if this set were to do well or to get more pick two drafts in the future, I do think this first version of pick two draft is very interesting to think about and podcast about, just because it's new. So anything new, even though I think this is still kind of a training wheels version of real draft, because it's new, I think it's juicy and fun to think about and talk about.
Yeah, I feel like the litmus test for us about like when we should hang up our podcasting microphones is like, because I just think no matter what, we're jazzed about a new set. When that doesn't happen, when we're like, it's a new set, I don't really care. And it's like, okay. I think it's time to say goodbye. But for now, we're still jazzed about this, despite you know, some trepidations and a lot to talk about, I think, just to sort of update our thoughts from last week and get everybody ready for the set going live on Arena and Magic Online on Tuesday. So let's do a little housekeeping and get into our thoughts. First things first is the Patreon page. Patreon.com/LordsOfLimited is where you can go to give back to the show if you so choose. We have some really great perks over at the Patreon page. One is our Discord, which everybody who gives back via the Patreon gets access to. It's a giant chat room of like-minded limited individuals with tons of little subsets and subsections. The main one that you'll be in is Spider-Man, but you know, we're going to have a watch party next week for the Pro Tour for those of us who aren't going to go to MagicCon Atlanta. So we'll get to be able to chat with people watching the draft in real time. That'll be fun. We'll get to talk about any like high stakes events. I'm sure there'll be some splintering happening. So if you aren't feeling Spider-Man and you want to go draft Edge of Eternities, you can talk with people who are drafting Edge of Eternities. The Discord's just an awesome place to go to chat with people who love Magic like you. And we also want to shout out our podcast feed, which gives you access to not only this episode a day early ad free, but also access to our weekly bonus episode of Lords Unlimited. So if any or all of that sounds of interest to you, head on over to the Patreon page, and we want to shout out our new patrons the first week that they join. This week, we're welcoming Dan, David, Ryan, and Envelop Your Soul. Thank you, thank you, thank you. We really appreciate your support.
It got dark quickly on the names list there.
Yeah.
Really truly did. Cannot say thank you enough. And if you're going to be in MagicCon Atlanta, I am also going to be in MagicCon Atlanta. Speaking of saying thank you, I would love to meet listeners of the podcast, say thanks for listening. Nothing would make me happier. Going to be there as just a regular Joe, not a content creator. So I'll probably get in about Friday, early afternoon, be my guess. Just hanging out, probably firing as many on-demand drafts and hotel lobby drafts as possible on Friday. And then Saturday morning, I'm PTQing for however long that lasts. It will either be probably long or quick, depending on what type of Edge of Eternity sealed pool I open. Kind of hoping for one or the other. I don't think there's a lot of in-betweens. So I think that will probably happen. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, if I scrub out, going to be doing more on-demand drafts. Sunday, just hanging out. So I'll try to post in the Lords Limited Discord and online if I've got some time where I'm at, if people want to say hello. Would love to meet listeners of the show.
Yeah, awesome. I'm very, very jealous. I'll be living vicariously through you on social media.
The show is also brought to you by FusionGamingOnline.com, your go-to destination for Magic the Gathering and more. Whether you're chasing down that last elusive rare, stocking up for draft night, or turning your extra cards into store credit, Fusion has you covered with great prices, fast shipping, and a huge selection. If you're in Canada, it's a no-brainer. And even if you're elsewhere, you might be surprised at how competitive Fusion is on price and speed. Check them out at FusionGamingOnline.com/Lords and let them know that we sent you. It's FusionGamingOnline.com/Lords. Great deals, great selection, delivered fast, especially if you're planning on getting those Spider-Man boosters. Maybe you need play boosters, fire up a pick four draft with your friends. Maybe you need to pick up some singles. Maybe you want to crack a collector's booster, see if you can get one of those soul stones that are worth like 20K. Who knows what's going on?
Are they really worth that much?
Oh, yeah. The full art, fully foiled, I was watching. Like, for whatever reason, YouTube Shorts have decided that I'm into Magic Finance, and I was watching a thing about, yeah, what the various arts and foilings of the Soul Stone are worth.
I love how people talk about their YouTube algorithms. Like, they have no agency over it whatsoever. They're like, for some reason, YouTube thinks I'm into Magic Finance. So anyway, I was watching this 30-minute video. Like, okay. Our buddy Sam posted in the Discord that he needed to pick up a Mox Opal for his cube, which is going to be featured at CubeCon in Madison. And I guess that maybe is next month. And he went with Fusion, and he said he got a good price and it shipped to him in 5 days. So love to hear that little testimonial from someone in our community. So that's awesome to see. So yeah, if you're trying to fill out a cube or anything, I think singles for sure, Fusion Gaming Online got you covered. All right, we were doing a lot of speculating about pick two. I think card evals, obviously we'll have some updates, but I largely feel good about where we landed. No big, massive changes from last week. But pick two draft, we were on pure speculation before getting to play with it in early access this week. So I think that's where we should dial in first.
Yeah, and I did a lot of them. As you said, you can really get that draft density going on early access day.
Not only because pick two draft is quicker, but they did this thing that I guess they will be doing for when they go live is you play less games. So it's instead of like best of one being first to 7 wins or 3 losses, it's first to 4 wins or 2 losses, which I think will be how it'll be in the regular queues. I'm not sure, but I will say I would love, love, love that to be what they do for early access going forward. Just like get people back in the draft queues. Like you don't need to be spending 90 minutes playing a deck out to get a trophy that doesn't mean anything. Like just get those drafts in, you know?
I will say it was a slight bummer when you had a sweet brew and you just lost your first round. You were like, oh my God, I want to keep playing this deck more. Like, because there's a chance you only get to play 2 rounds with your deck. Like,
that's true.
There were just absolute, I was thinking about it over the course of the day, just absolute killers in the queue all day. Like, I was just playing against great drafters, which, I mean, awesome problem to have. But there were a couple times I drafted some sweet brews and, like, lost some tight games and wanted to play with the deck a lot more.
Yeah, just like, all right, I'm up against Numot and Lola and Siggy and, oh, there's Numot again. Like, yeah, for sure.
Nikolai Bolas had my number on early access day. Just absolutely crushed me. So pick two draft. I'm very curious to pick your brain about this because I feel like I have a very clear picture of how I feel about pick two draft currently. I don't think it's probably going to change that much, but I do think it's very interesting. And the thing that stuck out the most to me about pick two draft after doing it was a lack of agency in the drafts. And what I mean by that is not that skill didn't matter. I still feel like draft skill mattered. I still felt like I was able to exercise my skills as a drafter. But one of the biggest level ups I had since we started the show was the ability to draft with preferences, like to identify what I think is the best archetype or a subset of the best archetypes and steer myself into those draft after draft. And I felt largely that I was not able to exercise that skill, which was very interesting. Did you have that same experience? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I had the same experience, and I think I would like, you know, if we could go back and revise some format truths or whatever, you know, one of the things you were saying was you thought that the format would teach people how to force. And I think it's honestly the exact opposite. I don't think you can force in pick two draft. And I think what it is going to do is teach people how to read signals, because it teaches you how to read signals in a really condensed way. Whereas I feel like in regular draft, you can kind of trick yourself sometimes into white's open or whatever. Like I got three good white cards and then I'll figure out the rest later. I'm going to be in white. And like this format is like, okay, you picked three white cards. There are no white cards in the next three packs. What are you going to do about that? And like, and especially when you have, like, you can convince yourself when you have to take only one card out of those packs. When you have to take two cards, you have to sort of like face facts and go, all right, white's not open. I got to figure out what else I'm supposed to do. So I think I'm totally on the same page with you that like, I had this experience where I was like, okay, I've drafted, white just kept being open for me in my early access drafts. And I really wanted to play blue-black because I still was like, I think blue-black is the best deck. I would like to play blue-black. And I just couldn't. I was like,
I can't. I know. I tried to do that too. I was like, I don't really want to test this thing out. And you start with two cards of those colors and it doesn't flow. And you're like, gosh, dang it.
Yeah.
And you could, in a normal draft pod, just kind of probably force something. And not that I do still think it's going to teach you when to lock in. Like, because there is a very clear lock-in point where you have next to no more wiggle room, depending on how your draft starts. And especially if you have to pivot, you get one chance to pivot. And then you pivot, and then you're stuck wherever you pivoted, because the draft does go by very quickly as well.
Yeah. But, like, to that point, I have this a little later down, and Samp was in my chat, and he mentioned this. I guess this was, he also talked about this on his podcast, Rough Drafts, was that there are two color, like assuming that all four players are going to draft four distinct color pairs, no matter what though that makeup is, two players or two colors rather will only be drafted by one person. And you really want to be one of those two people. You want to be one of the people drafting, being the only red drafter, the only green drafter at your table, while everybody else is dipping their toes into white, blue, or black or whatever. Because when the wheel opens up for you in that way, when you're just like, oh, I'm the only red drafter here, and so I'm getting red cards on the wheel, that is incredible. And that's like, that's not in opposition to your point about locking in, but it just means that like, if you find that open color, whichever color people aren't drafting, you do have slightly more wiggle room because the wheel is so open for you.
Yeah. Well, and speaking of the wheel's back. Like, that was the second thing that stood out to me in these pick two drafts, because if you are in, like you said, if you're the only person doing your thing, especially if you're in an uncontested color pair, you basically know you're going to be able to wheel the gold cards from your color pair, assuming they're not splashable. Like, the green does get to splash around, but I think the info you get on the wheel is very interesting. Mm-hmm. Like, if there's gold cards left on the wheel, you basically know 100% that that color pair is open. Not with 1,000% certainty, but strong indicators. And I think the other thing that's different, we were hypothesizing about pick two draft from Foundations draft, just normal Foundations draft. And what Spider-Man brings to the table that didn't have is less unplayables or less chaff. Like, because the set is smaller, so many of the commons are cards that you're interested in or willing to play. There's just less drags left on the wheel. Like, there's still actual cards.
For sure. Yeah. So again, all the more reason to not force because you just get paid off so much. Like, the, if you're weighing two things in the scales of like the power of your first two picks and then trying to pad those out in a contested seat versus the amount of playable cards you will get to see late, the scale tips pretty heavily, I think, in favor of the latter.
But it's different in a normal than in a normal draft format, I think, in that normally we would advocate for, like, we'll do a little bob and weave, you know, yeah. Try to get deep in one color and leave yourself flexible to the other four colors. But it being a guild set also sort of changes that. So I'm really curious on your thoughts on pack one, pair one, which is what I think we should start calling. I think that's very clean and establishes that it's pick two draft and not regular draft, that sort of thing. So pack one, pair one. I'm pretty firmly in the camp after doing whatever, 10, 12 drafts on that first day, that you should just always take the two best cards. Whatever you've identified as the two best cards are, even if they're in disparate guilds, decks, plans, whatever. And if you're taking a hit in power level, it needs to be very minor to get your cards to match up. Otherwise, it's not worth it.
Yeah, I think the like slight caveat I would put to that is that, like, I feel like there's a maybe not a clear best card. I mostly agree, and I don't know if it's even worth like getting into the nitty gritty of what I'm trying to describe, which is just that, like, more often I felt like I was identifying a clear best card, and then what was the second card I wanted to take with it, and picking from among two or three others of like, and then usually I would, if I could, with what you're saying of not taking a huge hit in power level, try and match it up to either the same color as the card I think is the best card in that pack, or one of the allied colors, so that I could set myself up for potentially playing both of those cards in my final deck. Because for all of the talk that we're saying of you're like the table is going to decide what you get to draft, you'd still, all things being equal, like to play the first two cards you pick also.
Right. So my experience generally was you pick your two cards, right?
Yeah.
And then one of two things happens. Either your first two picks, what you picked is open, in which uh-huh. case, carry on, my wayward son. Like, you just keep rolling. And that's great, where you do kind of just soft force from the beginning. And you just, like, that's flowing, and you keep matching up cards with your first two picks. Or, by about pack one, pair three, you get clear information that you are not going to be able to continue on your current road and have to pivot, like, right around then. And then whatever you pivot to, you continue on drafting that for the rest of the draft.
Yes, I'm with you there.
Okay. So the other thing that stood out to me a ton, which I would not have expected, just because it's so counterintuitive to what we always preach about draft philosophy, is that sending signals matters almost as much as receiving signals. Like, I think you get rewarded for sending clear signals. Like, I felt as the drafter, what we were talking about earlier, that my neighbor who was passing to me had complete control over what I was not able to draft. Like, mm-hmm. they could say, you can't draft green-white, or you can't draft black-red. And so you can also then by the transitive property of equality or something, I don't know, do that to your neighbor. And mm-hmm. so if you decide, like, once you decide you're doing a thing, I think you're incentivized to send very clear signals so that you can hopefully bully that person and maybe another person downwind of you out of that color pair. So basically, as long as you aren't drafting what your neighbor is passing to you and you cut what you want to play, you should be the only person doing what you're doing as far as a two color pair. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm curious how many, like, pick two, four-person drafts are going to end up with multiple people in the same color pair. Because it seems hard to do, because the signals are so clear. Like, I just don't know how you would do it, how you'd end up and end the draft and be like, oh, you're in green-white? I was in green-white, too. It's like, how?
Yeah, it would be tough. I mean, I guess if you would have to have both people open with great cards and try to be holding on for dear life. But yeah, the signals are just bigger and you get cut harder because it happens two at a time. Like, you're sending mm-hmm. twice as strong of a signal to the person to your left.
Right. Because of, like, they're going to see whatever, two packs in a row with no green cards in them.
Correct. You get the signals twice as fast and twice as hard. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think the stuff about trying to be in the only color, that's harder to set up. Like, that's happenstance. But if it happens to you, but the way that it can happen is if you're forced to pivot. Like, if you're forced to pivot into something, but even then, you're still kind of getting lucky at that point. It's not like it's not like you can wait until the wheel and be like, I think no one else is drafting black. Let me draft black.
No, the reason I wanted to highlight that thing about the, like, two players will be the only people drafting one of the colors is just to underline how incentivized you are to not force and to read signals. So not that you're guaranteed to set yourself up to be one of those two people, but the only way you do that really is by being like, oh, what's getting cut? What am I seeing a lot of?
Yeah, that checks out with me. So we talked about pack one, pair one. Mm-hmm. Taking the two best cards in the pack. Pack one, pair two, you already start to get some really strong signals. And it's not necessarily what is in the pack, but if you don't see any, like, cards that would go in blue-black, or cards that would, even if they're blue or black cards, where the premium cards are. And mm-hmm. Almost every time, I just started clocking this. Like, when I got pack one, pair two, I would make myself think, what powerful cards seem to be missing here? Like, where are the best cards not? To try to see if that lined up with the next pack, what I thought was being cut. And almost always it was true. Like, you're able to make a pretty educated guess about where you shouldn't be. Because a couple times I ignored my gut. Like, my gut was like, okay, it seems like some cards of this are missing, but I'm going to try to do this anyway. And then pack one, pair three rolled around, and it was like, nope, your gut was right. These cards were missing, and now it's abundantly clear that white isn't open or whatever.
Can we dial in on that a little bit? I just want to, like, figure out the nuance there, the distinction between what you're doing pack one, pair two, like, as maybe comparing it to what you're doing in a normal, like, pack one, pick three, or pack one, pick four of a regular draft, where you're probably still just trying to identify what the best card in the pack is. I think you're still probably doing that pair two, but what is this other layer? Like, how are you Sherlock Holmesing the pack to say what powerful thing isn't here?
It's more like if I see good cards of red, black, and I see good cards of blue, black, maybe I'm going to think if I started white rather than trying to pair some blue cards that are going to go with white, like, just to try to get an initial guess. About, it's not very scientific to Sherlock Holmes, it's very gut related, but to try to guess what I think my opponent's playing. And if there's a close decision, I agree, pack one, pair two, you're still largely taking the two best cards out of the pack. And I think honestly with pick two draft, if you just do that, you can't really go wrong, because that's going to force you to read signals if you're just taking the two best cards out of each pack. And you're just naturally going to end up falling into a lane if you take the two best cards out of each pack.
If you do that for the first four pairs, you'll figure, like, by the end of that, then plus the wheel, you'll know what you're supposed to be doing, I would think.
I would think so also, yeah.
But maybe the distinction you're making is like, look, if you took a couple white cards, pack one, pair one, and then pack one, pair two, like you said, maybe there's like a Dimir card or a Rakdos card, but there's also a Spectacular Tactics. You might normally be like, I could convince myself that I'm supposed to take tactics here and one other card, but you're really want to notice, like, well, but there is still this other stuff here, which might mean that there was more powerful white stuff taken out of this pack.
Yeah, I think the trap that it's easy to fall into pack one, pair two, or maybe not easy, but that a person could fall into, that I feel like I did a couple times, is that you have your first two cards and they go together. Mm-hmm. And it's very tempting to say, I want to cut X. I'm going to take this a third white card, like you said, and a green, white, gold card. When it's all close, but maybe the best card in the pack was black, red or something. Mm-hmm. But then you're totally nailed pack one, pick three, if then green and white is cut and you have to totally pivot. Whereas if you just took the best card in the pack, pack one, pair two, if you take that black, red card and then you maybe take a white card so that you've already got a feeler out.
Yeah.
If you're forced to pivot, and if you're not forced to pivot, great. Continue drafting white and whatever, but that just to try to be careful, pack one, pair two about locking in, I guess.
Yeah, I'm with you there.
And then pack one, pair three, that's the pivot pack for me. Like, the signals are going to be clear enough that you know if you have to abandon ship or not. And if you do, you need to do it boldly and aggressively. Pack one, pair three, I think.
Go boldly. With great power comes great responsibility in these drafts, I would say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you can pivot fast, which is nice.
Yeah. You've got such a great example of a draft where this is true that I would love to take a look at.
All right. Pack one, pair one. You sit down and you see the following cards as options. There's a Leyline Weaver, which is one Gruul hybrid for a 2/2 with reach, taps to add red or green, and whenever you cast a spell with mana value 4 or greater, untap this creature. That card is an absolute banger. One of the best commons.
Mm-hmm.
There's a Perilous Lunge, 2 and a green for a sorcery. Put a +1/+1 counter on target creature you control. It fights target creature and opponent controls. Another removal spell in white. There's Mothwing Shroud, 2 and a white for an enchantment. When this enchantment enters, exile target non-land permanent and opponent controls until this enchantment leaves the battlefield. In the uncommons, there's Vexed Bots, 1 and a blue for a 1/1 flyer. Whenever another villain you control enters, put a +1/+1 counter on this creature. This ability triggers only once each turn. And then in the rare slot, two rares, there's Laszlo Enthusiastic Accuser, 2 and a red for a 2/2. When he enters, suspect up to one target creature. And whenever a creature you control with menace attacks, create a treasure token. And there's also a Saga, a Most Helpful Weaver, which is 1 and a white, 3 chapters. First chapter, you make a 2/1 spider creature token with reach. Second chapter, you put a +1/+1 counter on target creature you control, and it becomes a legendary spider hero in addition to its other types. Not Spider-Man, though, just a legendary spider hero.
Yep.
And on chapter 3, target creature you control gains double strike until end of turn.
Pretty, I mean, not like the most interesting, I would say. Like, I think the three cards in consideration for me are a Most Helpful Weaver, the White Saga, Mothwing Shroud, the white removal spell, and Leyline Weaver, the Gruul hybrid 2-drop.
I agree. Those are the best three cards.
And I think you, like, I'm not even sure, like, I think then you would just be like, well, you just take the two white cards. I'm not sure that that's necessarily true. Like, I think I like doing that here, but I think you can make a really strong case for, like, part of what we're talking about in terms of things being open. I'm talking myself into wanting to take a white card and a not white card first, based on what we're talking about with, like, the table's gonna let you know what you're supposed to do. So, like, if white's open, great. White will be open, and you'll get more white cards. And if white isn't open, then Leyline Weaver gives you more outs. No?
I don't love that, because here's a case where I think a Most Helpful Weaver is the best card. Are we in agreement there?
I think so. I'm not sure, though. Is this
Leyline Weaver might be the best card, but it's all very close.
Yeah, a Most Helpful Weaver isn't that great. Like, it's fine. It's
very good in the spiders deck. There's a green-white spiders deck running around.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Having a spider plus turning one of your non-spiders into a spider when you care about having spiders is very strong.
Sure.
But it's close. I agree that it's all close. And normally I would be on the same page with you. I do think you can make an argument for it. Leyline Weaver and a Most Helpful Weaver. The counter argument I want to make is that I think you're sending bad signals when you do that. Or you're leaving, like, the nice thing about taking two white cards here is you're passing zero white cards. And that's what I mean also by, like, when somebody receives this pack one, pair two, they should be thinking, okay, it seems like my neighbor's in white. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? And if maybe you started green, and rather than taking two white cards to pair with your green card, maybe you're looking to pair red cards with your green card or whatever. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I like sending clearer signals, but I also think that pick two draft is pretty interesting, at least early on, and I'm sure it is going to get solved because it's less complex and less dynamic than a regular draft, but it's very interesting to think about. And I think the most interesting thing is that signals to your left matter a lot more to me currently than they do in regular draft, and maybe I'm just off base on that take, but I'm pretty interested in signals I'm sending to my left.
Okay. I do think it's a compelling take that you're sending worse signals, but I feel like maybe that doesn't matter,
maybe you just care about you and you don't mind train wrecking your neighbor to the left or whatever.
I love Leyline Weaver. I'm like, am I supposed to take Leyline Weaver and Laszlo? Is that possible?
Is that, I don't think Laszlo is that good. Laszlo's the 2/2 that suspects something.
Well, I mean, the curve of 2-drop into Laszlo attack with your 2-drop that is now menace and you get a treasure is pretty darn good.
Sure, it is. The other thing that I think is very interesting about this, I think it's easy to do what I did, which is be reductive towards pick two draft and say, well, it's less complex or whatever. But it's almost like playing an aggro deck where, like, the decisions you make are just compounded, like, way up front. Like what you do in your first three pairs of picks is really hard. And I think there's a lot of considerations. And then after that, you're kind of on easy mode. But I think there's a ton of decision making front loaded in pick two draft. Like, I would like 2 minutes on like my first three pairs each, and then give me like 30 seconds the rest of the draft.
That's true. Okay, well, so a lot to discuss in this first pack, but I like where you landed. I think if it's wrong, it can't be wrong by that much to land on taking the white rare saga and the white removal spell.
Well, and for teaching podcasting purposes, it's much better because then we get to see us getting hard cut.
Correct. Right? Yeah.
Okay, so we've got a most helpful Weaver and Mothwing Shroud. Pack one, pair two, see the following cards as options. Oof. There are literal zero white cards in the pack.
Yep.
So the thing we talked about. And then cards that look good. There's Favorite Fighter, which is an absolute banger. 3 and a green for a 4/4. When it enters, make a treasure token. This creature can't be blocked by more than one creature. There's Deathflame Burst. 2 and a red for a sorcery. Deals 4 damage to target creature. Mayhem, 1 and a red. Can we check in on this? Can we get a temp check? You were slightly down on this. Have you come up on it?
I've come up on it, but mostly just like... I have come up on it. I am down on Mayhem in general, which I think we'll get to.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Okay.
But I, 2 and a red sorcery deal 4 has been good enough for me so far. So that's why I'm in on Deathflame Burst.
Scorpion Sting, 1 and a black instant. Target creature gets -3/-3 until end of turn, also in the pack. Mm-hmm. And then moving into the uncommons, there's some bangers here. There's Tyrlay, Entropic Hunger. 2 blue-black for a 3/1 flying vigilance lifelink, and you can play blue-black to exile it from your graveyard to look at the top 3 cards of your library. Put one of them into your hand and the rest on the bottom of your library in any order. There's also Selesnya Archivist, 3 and a green for a 3/3. When this enters, return target card, excuse me, with mana value 4 greater from your graveyard to your hand, and exile target artifact or enchantment. And then your rare also sitting in the pack, the one you're excited about. We talked about this on Lords Unlimited, for those of you who are wondering what I'm referencing. This is Spectral Restitching, blue X for an instant, exile X target artifacts and or creatures, return the exiled cards to the battlefield under their owner's control at the beginning of the next end step. Ultimately, this pack for me settled how I felt about that rare, which was that I was not that interested in picking it here, pack one, pair two.
I'm interested in playing the card, but yes, I'm not interested in picking it highly. This is fascinating. This pack is fascinating to me because it's very easy for me to want. So like, I think that... I'm just trying to think about like how we talk about it. Do we talk about the possible pairs out of packs?
Yeah,
like,
is that... I think so.
Because like Deathflame Burst is a card that's on my radar, but I don't really see a pair. Like, I feel like it's kind of out because there's not really a pair that I want to take. The two pairs that seem most appealing to me are either the 2 green cards, the Favorite Fighter and the Selesnya Archivist. Because that potentially gives you the path to, I can be white-green with my first 2 picks.
Right.
And they're great. Or you take into account there are no white cards in this pack, and that means something.
It does. That has to mean something here.
No, I'm not saying it doesn't mean something. I'm saying you let that inform your decision.
Yeah.
And say, taking these 2 green cards doesn't really... Like, that basically means I'm taking 2 green-red cards because I'm assuming white's going to be cut, and that's the only other color pair that these green cards will go in. And so then maybe you say, well, what's the other option I have? And there's a Scorpion Sting and there's a Dimir Signpost, and I can just take those.
Well, I think there's so many interesting things to talk about, which is the first most interesting thing is I didn't clock on my first go through of this draft that there were no white cards in this pack. Cause I did a redux of this draft to see where things happened and what my decision points were. Mm-hmm. Because initially looking at this pack, it's easy to think like a most helpful Weaver already wants to go in green, white. And I was great. I'll take 2 green cards and draft green, white. Boom. Great. Golden locked. And I think that's very easy to have that initial reaction because the 2 green cards are 2 of the strong, it's the strongest pair. I think that you can make the 2 green cards.
The other pair seems pretty good to me too.
Except they don't go with your first 2 cards. You know what I mean? Like that boosts the strength of the green pair, I think, even if you're suspecting that it's going to be cut.
Yeah, I guess it's hard to be like, it lets you play your first 2 cards. I'm like, there's not really a world where you're playing these first 2 cards, I don't think.
There is if your neighbor's blue-white, Like, I think you can share a color with your neighbor.
Yeah, sure.
I think you can share a color with your neighbor. It's not ideal, mm-hmm. but I think you can share a color with your neighbor. But so I agree the other possible pair is Tyrla and Scorpion Sting. Do mm-hmm. you really want to give up the chance to maybe play green-white? Like, you're abandoning your first two picks here. I don't think so. I don't think I'm interested in that.
I don't know. I just feel like I'm going to be an echo chamber for the point you made like 15 minutes ago, which is like pack one, pair two. Notice what powerful stuff isn't here.
But Selesnya Archivist and Favored Fighter are both great cards. I think they're both better than Tyrla and Scorpion Sting.
And I think they're all pretty close.
They're all pretty close. I agree. But let's say you have a 20% chance to still be green white or something, or a 15% chance to be green white, and then you've got a chance to be green red. I think that's worth more than guaranteeing you're not going to play your first two picks.
I don't know.
Interesting.
It's really interesting. Maybe I'm over indexing on wanting to like really be in open color pair, open color, but yeah, it does make me nervous. And I do think the really interesting thing is that Deathflame Burst is a card that we shouted out. But ultimately, like, there isn't a pair that you can come up with that includes that card.
Right, because you're never, if you're taking a green card, you're always taking the other green card.
Correct. And if you take
Tyrla, you have to take Scorpion Sting to go with it.
Right, and there's just no card to
Deathflame Burst is just the fifth best card in the pack. I think, well, probably the fourth best card. I think Deathflame Burst is better than Scorpion Sting.
I think that's probably true. I don't have enough experience to say, but I like that it can kill a favored fighter.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Scorpion Sting, time and time again, could not kill the thing I needed it to kill.
Yeah. It's a combat trick, kind of.
Kind of.
Yeah. Okay.
Oof, so anyway, all right. For the purposes of this draft, we took the two green cards. We took Favored Fighter and we took Selesnya Archivist. Pack one, pick three, you just get walloped over the head.
Yeah.
And there is literal zero green cards in the pack after mm-hmm. getting past two great green cards. And the only white card is Lively Leap, which is basically not a card. It's white, instant target creature gets +2/+2. And so now it's like, well, shoot.
Yeah.
Like I have to pivot.
You have to pivot. Yeah. You have to scrap your. And then that's the thing. That's the reason that I'm like, is it like, should you be taking your, like, you're already shaking your head at me. So I guess
I am shaking my head at you because I have some strong feelings, but say what you're going to say.
What I was going to say is because it feels so bad to set yourself up to be in this position. This is what I was saying earlier, but if you're in this position where you're going to scrap your first four picks, should we not perhaps slightly be correcting in pair one and pair two to diversifying our options a bit more? Because the two things that are going to happen are like something clear is going to be open to you. And so then you just get to maximize the cards from your first two pairs that make your final deck.
Yeah, you get to maximize the cards from your first two pairs that make your final deck. So you want to diversify in the first two pairs to leave yourself out for pack one, pair three. Except I think the thing I don't like about that is that
you're
sending messy signals.
Yeah.
And I think the best drafts and the best decks are going to be when what you started with, pack one, pair one, are open and you get to continue drafting that. Like the pods that have the best decks that are going to trophy are going to be when, like, you just naturally all start in a pair and it works. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And people aren't forced to pivot and jockey for position and whatever. And because we're in leagues, those are the decks that are going to go on to trophy. And I think if you're hedging and sending weird signals, you're not setting yourself up to have a draft like that. I think it is worth taking the chance on scrapping your first four picks because I still think you end up with a playable deck. And maybe even a good deck if you pivot into the right thing. And the upside of when you don't have to completely pivot is very high.
Yeah. So you end
but
up
I,
taking...
But I also think this is a very polarized draft because
sure.
we did end up in the spot where pair two, we had to pick cards that went with our first two picks of a color that we thought was cut. And I guess mm-hmm. we didn't have to. So maybe there's a world where in this specific draft, you are supposed to... I don't know. It's so tough. I still want to take those green cards. Even now, knowing what's going to happen.
Wait, that's crazy. Even now, knowing what's going to happen, you don't want to take the Dimir cards.
I mean, but it's like the thing where, like, how did you have a chance to get into blue black? I don't think you but maybe you do.
I think you definitely. I think it's close. If you really like, I mean, it depends how much weight you're supposed to put on. There are no white cards pair two. I think you're supposed to put
a lot of weight
on that.
So do you think? Okay, so there's no white cards. Pack one, pair two.
Uh-huh.
That means you're going to just say on one pack of signals that you can't draft blue, white, or green, white. So because you picked two white cards, like because you started with two white cards and there's no white cards in the next pack, you're forcing yourself to move to Grixis or green, red. Like blue, the only decks you're going to leave open to yourself are blue, black, black, red, and green, red on one pack of signals. Maybe. It's a tough ask, but maybe.
I also don't, like, your first two picks aren't bombs. They're fine.
I agree.
I think that's also part of it, where I'm like, I'm not saying you, I think it's close. I think the either Dimir card plus the black removal spell is close to taking the two green cards. What?
We're like 45 minutes into this episode already. We're like two picks in this draft, but this draft's interesting. So can I float another thought by you, which is if we looked at pack one, pair two as pack one, pair one, what do you want to take there? Can I ask you that question?
I want to take the two green cards.
That's also what I want to take, but maybe that's where the logical trap is for myself, because we have more information than that. And the blue and black cards are close enough.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You're kind of talking me into the blue-black thing. You're kind of talking me into it.
Well, it just depends. Like, are you supposed to put that much weight on it? The thing is that, like, it loops back to the point we made of, like, you're just not going to get to force. The table is going to, like... Or, I mean, you can force and end up with an atrocious deck. But if you want to draft with any modicum of, like, respect to what you're seeing, you're like, the table will tell you what to do, has been our experience from the whatever, you know, two dozen early access drafts we did. And so I think I'm just and I don't feel any kind of way. Even I said I'm down on Mayhem, and we'll talk about the color pairs, like. I'm happy to draft any of the five color pairs.
I agree. Yes. You just have to, by necessity. Right. You just have to be willing to.
And so I just want to be in the one that's open. And so when I see this pack and I see there's no white cards, I don't really want to draft. Like I should answer that question. You were like, you don't want to draft like white green next to someone who's white blue. I'd like to not, if I can avoid it.
But see, that's the thing. I don't think I care about that. I'm kind of coming back around to the green cards. I'm going to stake my claim for the green cards. Here's why. I think there's a chance your neighbor is white-blue, in which case green will still flow, and you'll get all the green-white-gold cards if you're still the only green drafter. Plus, you can also pivot to green-red, which doesn't touch white. Mm-hmm. So basically, we're treating these green cards as either like maybe some small chance we get to play green-white, and then green, red, gold cards. Mm-hmm. And by taking Tirla and Scorpion Sting, you're basically taking two blue, black, gold cards. I don't think that's any less risky than taking the two green cards. And I think there's a lot of upside with the two green cards.
Yeah, there's more upside, but there's more downside.
But I don't think so. We just happen to hit the downside. You know what I mean? Except you know your neighbor took two white cards. But you still theoretically have green red open to you, and blue black is open to you. Like, either way, at the end of this pick, either blue black is open and you're good, or green red is open and you're good, or you get a draft green white some 5%, 10% of the time or something.
Yeah. All right. Let's put this draft to bed.
Neither here nor there. So pack one, pick three, you take some blue and black cards. Lo and behold, green white is hard cut. There's no green white cards. Pack one, pick four either. You end up in a messy blue-black deck. You do wheel the Tirla. I think pick two draft is initially very interesting to talk about, think about, and podcast about because it's new.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, let's dive into some bigger picture updates on the format.
So color pairs. Normally we're trying to like shout out what we think the best color pair is. I don't think it matters because I don't think you can soft bias towards a color pair, really. Like you just have to take whatever the two best cards are, pack one, pair one. And then you have to try to figure it out from there.
Yeah.
I've been especially impressed. If I had to pick two, I've been especially impressed with Blue White and Red Black. So I'm interested to hear why you're potentially down on Mayhem.
So for, yeah, for me, if I had to pick my, the, I like, it's funny. I guess I do really like Blue White too. I like Blue Black a lot. I like Green White a lot. I think Red Black is my least favorite currently of the five decks. So for me, the Mayhem decks are like A plus B decks where like you're trying to get Mayhem cards and cards that let you discard Mayhem cards for value. And I think if you draw your deck in the wrong order, like if you draw all your A's or all your B's, your deck doesn't really function. And I think there's also the layer of you're doing this kind of work to make your cards like the rate that other colors get, sort of. And as both of those combined make me like not super jazzed about Red Black Mayhem.
Well, but there are a couple of thoughts. One, I mean, you're doing work to make your cards the same rate, but they're also all 2-for-1s when you do that, which is
sure
huge upside. Like the Red Black decks can also grind in addition to being hyper aggro.
Yeah, mostly 2-for-1s. If your only discard outlets are the ones that are connive or like discard a card, draw a card type deals.
Sure. Yeah. I guess that is not a fair characterization. Sometimes you just have to discard a card to play it for its madness cost. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think what you were talking about with A plus Bs, early on, I was trying to do that with web slinging quite a bit. Like, oh, I got to get a curve to where I can curve and then do my web slinging thing. But then I'd only end up with like 3 enablers and 6 web slingers and it's called in web. Sorry, on Arena. I think it's forever going to be web slinging in my head, though.
Yeah.
Because in web is such a clunky name and web slinging is very much what the cards do. You're not trapping something. You're slinging a web.
I will say pretty cool. Like it does feel like when you're doing the like picking up your thing, like I do kind of feel it's got that vibe of like Spider-Man going from, I don't know. I'm not a flavor guy, but like, it kind of works for me.
I agree. Web slinging is a very, very flavorful top-down design.
Yeah.
But I started doing a lot better. I got shellacked like my first, I don't know, 4 or 5 drafts because I was trying to do things. And I think I was trying to steer myself places. And once I backed off and was just like, no, I'm not going to have a clear plan. Like, I just want to take the best cards I see and make a deck full of the best cards I can make. I started doing a lot better. And then when the synergy happened, when I was able to in web, it was great. When I was able to Mayhem, cool. But I wasn't trying to force my deck to do a thing because one of the things that can happen because so many less cards are opened is that you don't get the right ratio of payoffs and enablers.
Yes. Okay, I agree. Because I feel similarly like in web and the green white deck, and I do like it, but I feel like the cards are just good. And then
they're just good cards.
If you get to web sling, awesome. I feel slightly less convinced that the Mayhem cards are just good cards, you know?
That's fair, but it's a good deck. Like if red black's getting past you, you should definitely draft red black. I think that is the overarching message from the podcast.
Sure. Yes. Caveats aside, and to that, like colors and color pair rankings don't really matter because you're just gonna have to do what you have to do.
Yes. I'm curious on softer pods on Arena if that changes, right? Because we were drafting with all experienced drafters who all know how to send signals and all know how to draft good decks. And I'm sure the average Arena drafter does too, but I'm sure there are going to be soft pods where you don't experience what we're talking about.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So talking color pairs and talking decks, I think what we said is currently my mantra, which is that I don't necessarily plan on my deck doing a thing. I just want to get as many of the best cards as possible in my deck, and then some sort of plan will arise from that, whether or not it's what the color pair is supposed to do. But if we're talking about what the color pairs want to do naturally, I think blue-white really wants to play out like a tempo deck. You want to play get ahead, stay ahead, protect the queen, like a modified threat type deal. The Azorius common is absolutely busted. It's called Wonderweave Aerialist. It's Azorius for a 2/2 with Ward 2, and it has flying as long as it's modified. It's a gigantic problem, and it's, I think, blue-white's best common. Like, if you're going to be blue-white, that is what you want to do.
Yeah.
So that's how blue-white wants to play. Blue-black, I'm a little down on because I think it wants to play out like a control deck, and I do think it wants to play at instant speed a lot. I have found that I've had more success being proactive than reactive, and maybe that's just not having found out how to build the reactive decks yet.
Yeah, that's fair. I don't know. I had the one time I got to draft blue black, it was a great deck, and so I'm like probably over indexing on like still a good deck, you know. But
I think I played too many Scorpion Stings in Blue Black too. Once I I moved Scorpion Sting down in my pick order, I also started doing better.
Okay.
So green red, again, both of the green decks, I think, you just really want to play good cards. Like, don't get hung up on in webbing, don't get hung up on mana value 4 or greater. And the beautiful thing about the two green pairs is you can splash, and I think you're incentivized to splash.
Yeah, for sure. Well, yeah, and that's part of the thing is, like, don't get hung up on the, like, the in web or the mana value 4 stuff, because, like, that's just going to naturally happen when you're playing your, like, your 4-mana 4/4 that makes a treasure and your 5-mana 4/3 in web that gets a basic land into play. Like, you're just going to have these good cards. And then if they happen to, you happen to get some synergy stuff and, like, untap your 2/2 mana dork when you play something big, like, cool. But you don't need to worry about that. I think if your card evals are good, then the deck will naturally have some synergy.
Yeah, I think that's having good card evals, I think, is going to be the most important thing for success in the drafts, because looking at the spoiler, like, the decks are going to be very on rails. And I think they can be, but I don't know that that's the most common scenario, just because so many fewer cards get opened per draft. Mm-hmm. That I think we thought the decks were going to look very samey, and I don't think they are actually going to look that samey.
Hmm. Why is that? Because
it's so easy to envision, like, the green-white deck going with City Pigeon into my Spider Girl into in web or whatever, and the games just don't play out like that frequently, I didn't find.
Yeah. Okay, that's fair.
I do think green-white, if you're going to bias towards something, if there's a close decision, you want to pick whatever the spider is. I think if you pick spiders, good things are going to happen for you if you're in the green space, specifically the green-white space, but also just green. Like, there's a lot of cool spider stuff happening in green.
Yeah.
I found winning games, or just how the games played out, that the two most common ways I either won or lost was burying the opponent in card advantage, which it's very easy to do. There are a lot of uncommons that can do that. There are a lot of rares that can do that. Or tempo, get ahead, stay ahead. Like, red-black can really come out swinging. Blue-white can really come out swinging and make it difficult to where your opponent has to time the removal spell at a very certain window, and oftentimes you can have something up to protect it in that window, that those two decks could come out hard and fast.
The other thing about just a gameplay note is block fishy attacks you just want to trade off, especially if people are in the Bant space. Like, I got away with a lot of web slinging on Wednesday and Thursday that I should not have if people were like, I think people... It's going to happen quickly, I would imagine. But people are going to go from, oh, you probably have this attack means you have a trick, I'm not going to block, and then you get web slunged or you get in webbed. You want to make that mental shift of, like, oh, this attack means you want to web sling, I'm going to block. And even if that means you get your creature gets picked off by a combat trick, whatever. But that's way better than them playing a 3-mana 4/3. Yeah.
I will say the 3-color wedges, I think, are all pretty playable, like, way more than I would have thought. Like, I think the format is deceptively deep, especially for the ones that touch green. Like, Bant and Bant Spiders or Bant Good Cards is a very strong deck. I ended up there several times. Like, green-white was the thing that I kept being forced into in the pick two drafts.
Yeah.
I've been impressed with Jund, Naya, like, basically anything that touches green, like, you can just do all of that stuff pretty easily, or splash around. Not that you're full 3 colors, but being a base 2-color plus splashing cards of a 3rd color. And I think, for example, there was a draft where I was black-red, and I just happened to get lucky and pick up 2 blue-black duels and the Evolving Wilds to have reasonable mana. I don't think that's going to happen draft in and draft out. But then splashing, like, the premium blue cards, because nobody in the table was blue, I don't think. Like, blue-white gold cards were running around, blue-black gold cards were running around, and getting to cherry-pick the best blue uncommons was very nice for my deck.
In this theoretical draft, why were you not drafting blue?
It was too late. Like, by the time it was, like, my thing was open enough, and by the time it was apparent, you couldn't jump ship.
Gotcha. Okay.
I will say, you said 4 toughness seemed like the magic number to you. I think 5 toughness has been the magic number. Favorite fighter is gigantic, the 3 and a green 4/4, and cards that can block that are really strong. And then cards with 5 toughness also dodge Deathflame Burst, which is the 2 and a red sorcery, deal 4 to a creature.
Okay, yeah, I buy it. I just feel like when you say 5 is the magic number, it's like, why not 6? Why not 7? Yes, large creatures are good, but like...
Well, but there's, I guess, specifically on the back of two blue-black, a blue card and a black card that have really impressed. Gift of Malice has been very impressive. Like, it looks super clunky, but it's a problem. It's 4 and a black for a 4/5 common with Death Touch, and it has 2 and a black, exile from your graveyard, puts you +1/+1 counters on target creature, it gains Death Touch until end of turn, activate only as a sorcery. Basically, if you're ahead when you cast this, it's impossible to double block. And then, like, you're going to get some amount of extra value out of it out of the graveyard. And it's also really good in red black. Like, you can just aggressively pitch it to the things that make things unable to block, cast it out of the graveyard for a +2/+2. So you're kind of getting like half a card's worth of value there. I just like the card.
Yeah. I was less impressed by it, but there's been enough scuttle about it that I could see it. I just think, like, especially in the Grixis spaces, not only Mayhem cards, but any cards you can find that want to be pitched to Connive to give you a counter is really good to have. And this is one of those.
Yes. So has there been scuttle about that card? I haven't seen any of the scuttle.
I saw some people talking, just being like, noting like, oh, this before like looked clunky, playing better than I thought. Like, still probably a, you know, it's a C grade card or whatever. Like, it's not a high pick. It's not something you'll miss probably, but worth noting.
Yeah. The other one is Ozor, Chronicler of Collapse, the 4 blue, 4/5. And if you have another villain, it has hexproof. And if you have 8 or more cards in your yard, it turns into an 8/8.
Everything is a villain in Grixis.
Yeah. That was why I was so confused. People are talking about that removal spell like it costs 5. Like, it doesn't. It costs 3 and that you gain 2 spell life. Is
so good.
It's so good.
Yeah. 3 mana kill a thing, gain 3 is, or gain 2 is pretty good.
Yeah. All right, so can we briefly touch on top commons?
Sure.
Okay, so, and normally we haven't done this in quite a while. We used to do this on every episode of Lords of Limited, where we would go through what the top commons are of each color. And since we've changed it to 10 notable commons, but I think this set is small enough that you see the same commons enough that it's worth talking about and dialing in on pick orders, especially early in the draft. So I think you're supposed to take Spectacular Tactics and Mothwing Shroud. So Spectacular Tactics is the destroy mana value 4 or greater, put a +1/+1 counter on something.
Not mana value those. 4 or greater, power 4 or greater,
excuse me, yeah. Thank you. And Mothwing Shroud is the O-ring effect. I think you're supposed to take both of those over City Pigeon early in the draft, which is the single white 1/1 flyer, and Principled Referee also, which is the 4 mana 2/3, put a +1/+1 counter on each of up to 2 target creatures, return target creature with mana value 2 or less from your graveyard to your hand.
Yes, I'm into that. Like, I think City Pigeon has been good, not great. So
I agree. I've done better when I've moved it down in my pick order.
Yeah.
It's great when you get the nuts curve, but I don't think it's worth going after the nuts curve that hard in your picks.
Okay.
Where are you at between Spectacular Tactics and Mothwing Shroud?
I'm on Shroud, personally.
Are you?
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, that's still up in the air for me. I don't have a clear sense. But we should, I think, make Spectacular Tactics the Fusion Gaming Online card of the day.
Ooh, thank you very much. And why is that? What makes it so spectacular to you?
I just think it's iconically Spider-Man. It's a good card for a namesake Fusion Gaming card, as well as I think it's interesting. I think it's really good. I think currently I want to play with Spectacular Tactics more. Like, I know how good Mothwing Shroud is, and I don't think it's crazy to think that Spectacular Tactics is going to end up better. And so I want to play with Spectacular Tactics more.
Well, the thing I really like about it, and I'm glad you're shouting it out, as our FusionGamingOnline.com/Lords card of the episode.
Seamless
of the
plug there.
It's very good because it's the one card that lets you do what I'm saying that people are assuming you can do. And so once people start to correct to the side of I need to block fishy attacks from white decks, Spectacular Tactics gives you a card in your deck that lets you punish those blocks.
Correct.
Yeah. It's very good.
Blue commons. I was super impressed with Unstable Experiment. The 1 and a blue instant, target player draws a card, then up to 1 target creature you control connives. If you ever hit the combat blowout with this, it's disgusting.
It's just like, it honestly very, this feels reductive, but it played out like a 2 mana combat tutorial. It was just like 2 mana instant speed, draw 2, get a counter.
Yeah, if you're, like, well, and sometimes you're killing a thing when you get to use it as a combat trick. Like when you win the combat with it, oh, so good.
Yeah.
I was also, you poo-pooed Phantasmal Vision. I was crazy impressed with Phantasmal Vision. One in a blue, 1/3 flying vigilance when it attacks mill a card.
It's good. It's especially like getting, once you get a counter on this card,
it's so hard to deal with. That's why I kept getting wrecked with my -3/-3 black card, whatever that's called, Scorpion Sting. I just kept like being sad that I had that in my hand against a 2/4 flying Phantasmal Vision.
Mm.
So I think, is it crazy to want to take both those cards over Snatchback? I was underwhelmed by Snatchback. Is that an overcorrection? Are we in Sibsig Appraiser territory with that take?
That seems overcorrection to me. I was very happy with Snatchback.
Okay. Maybe I just had it in some awkward spots. So are you still on Snatchback number one? You want to move Unstable Experiment up?
I have Snatchback 1, Experiment 2 in my pick order.
Okay. Yeah. Keep your eyes peeled for the blue commons, but Phantasmal Vision's been impressive, worth noting. I also was really impressed with Drix Interception, the one blue. Like, I just kept thinking, well, if they have Drix Interception here, I'm totally screwed. Like, and sometimes they did, and I was totally screwed. Counterspell tap two creatures is a big tempo swing.
Yeah, I agree.
Is like the especially big blowout is like a lot of times people want to use a removal spell pre-combat to like enable, like when you counter the removal spell, tap their things, then you get to attack them back. Just leads to a lot of interesting things.
Yeah.
Black, I think Damning Caress is far and away the best black common. It's 4 black for a sorcery, costs 2 less to cast if you control a villain. Destroy target creature, you gain 2 life. That card is excellent. Scorpion Sting's gone way down for me, but those are basically black's commons.
I think I'm on Swarm, or what is it? Wekdu. The Wekdus and Wekdonts of Omen Paths Limited. I'm on Wekdu, the 3-mana 2/2 Flash Flying Mayhem single black, as black's second best common.
That doesn't sound crazy to me, but that also doesn't make me very excited to play black because I don't like that card that much. Do you like that as much as you did after playing with it?
Yes, I do.
Okay. I played with it a fair amount too, and I still have similar feelings about it, which is good, but not great, I think.
It's interesting. If you don't like that card, but you like red black, that is curious to me.
I don't like that it's legendary. Did you run into the legendary common problem?
No, I did not.
I ran into it several times, like legendary commons and legendary uncommons. There was a time when green red was open and I had like 5 of the green red gold uncommon, which I didn't really want to have that many of it, but I had to because that was how the draft went and green red was open. And I would have to just like trade them off so that I could play my next one, like rather than being able to play a normal game of Magic. It's a terrible feeling. Terrible feeling.
Yeah.
Red, Deathflame Burst, we've been very impressed with. That's the deal 4 damage for 2 and a red. Galvanized Workforce has come way up for me. That's the 1 in red 2/2 trample. Whenever you cast a spell with 4 mana value 4 greater, it deals damage. And then you can pay 6 to put 2 plus and plus 1 counters on it. Having mana dumps like that later in the game, pretty good. Sadistic String Puller, we shouted this out as a sleeper card. I think it is as good as we thought it was going to be. 3 in a red, 4/3, and it's got Mayhem 1 in a red.
I'm a little lower on it. But again, I'm not trying to like, I don't want to overcorrect and keep underlining. Like I'm a little lower on that card and red black in general. I also want to talk about Shock.
Yeah, jury's out for me on Shock. I'm curious to hear your thoughts.
I think Shock is not good.
That's where I would land if you told me I had to choose right now, but I don't feel confident in that choice.
That doesn't kill a lot of stuff. And there's many mechanics that grow things. Like you're getting counters on stuff, you're conniving, stuff gets out of range of it. I was not impressed by Shock. I think it's like, you play one, but I think the serious diminishing returns after the first copy.
But like shocking a Leyline Weaver feels so good.
Yeah, but there's not a lot of those.
Of Leyline Weaver type cards. Yeah.
Yeah.
Moving on to green, I think Favored Fighter is the best one, like pretty clearly. 3G, 4/4, make a treasure. Can't be blocked by more than one creature. That card feels awesome. It also lets you splash. Points to you. I'm in on Xan Tunnel Web Explorer. 4G, 4/3, within web 2 in a green. Search your library for basic land, put it on the battlefield tapped. If you ever in web that, it's excellent. And even casting it on 5 mana is fine to enable splashes.
Yeah.
Perilous Lunge is good too. That's the plus one plus one counter fight spell.
I don't like that card.
Okay.
Like
I love it, but you're going to play it.
You're going to play it, but it's like, I think it's like Shock levels of like, I'm not excited about it. Like, sorcery speed and fight. That combination is really awkward. Because
I agree.
Yeah, you just like multiple things have to go right. I'm not a huge fan.
Can I get an overall removal temperature check from you?
Meaning what?
Meaning, do we think threats are better? Do we think removal's better? Do we think removal's good? Are there a lot of removal spells to stand out? Did you feel like you had to have, like in Final Fantasy, did you feel like you had to have interaction to deal with the threats that were going to come down at certain times?
I think my gut reaction is to say that I think removal still really matters, but it's like tiered pretty aggressively. That like the spells that we just shouted out, like the Damning Caress, like the kill a thing, gain two life, Spectacular Tactics, Mothwing Shroud, Deathflame Burst, like those cards matter. Medium removal really doesn't matter. Like Shock and Perilous Lunge and like those
Scorpion
kinds of cards.
Sting, Scorpion I would put Sting, in that boat.
They like you'll play them, but I'm taking threats over them.
Okay. Interesting. I think that's where I land also. But I did feel like I had to be packing interaction. Although I did trophy with a, I mean, who knows? That's such a small sample size of four games or something. But I had like a 22 creature red green deck that just like could churn through its deck and keep playing threats. And that did pretty well.
Chonk, chonk.
Okay, multicolored cards. We shouted out Wonderwheel Veralist. I think it and Leyline Weaver are hands down the two best gold uncommons.
Yeah, I buy that. I still like Gallant Citizen, but I don't think it's better than those two.
Yeah, and I mean, it's good. You're always playing Gallant Citizen in every green-white deck. Knife Trick has been pretty impressive also as a one-mana way to enable madness. Like to turn this into Lightning Bolt plus play a madness thing.
Quarter in the Swear Jar, Mayhem.
Mayhem, yeah, Quarter in the Swear Jar.
Well, because I will say, and I just want to say this because if you haven't played with it, it may not be it wasn't apparent to me until I see it in early access. It's not madness. Like if you mayhem something in your first main phase, you can cast it in your second main phase.
Correct.
If you discard a mayhem thing in your combat step, you can play it second main. Like I didn't quite realize. I did think you kind of had to, I was like, oh, it's worse madness. Like you do it and then timing restrictions apply. So you basically only always have to do it
no,
in
it's
your
just
main
fixed
phase.
Madness where you can't like flash in creatures.
Right. Unless it's Wekdu. Yeah.
Unless it's Wekdu, yeah.
Yeah.
And Blue-Black really got shafted with Mob Lookout. That card is no bueno.
I'm going to be a Mob Lookout defender here.
Okay.
I just, again, one Blue-Black deck, but I had three Mob Lookouts, and I really liked them.
To do like, what?
Well, it's very good to enable, I mean, I guess I really like it with Wekdu, but like, it's just really good to be a cheap thing that enables the your mayhem stuff. And I just like having my 2-mana 1/4s in those Dimir decks.
Okay.
It also
and putting a counter on Phantasmal Vision.
Yeah, sure. Putting a counter on the vision. The other thing I liked about it was it enables a turn 3 nil Vessel of Vel'Goth. That's the 2 and a black 2/2 that returns a villain from your graveyard to your hand, and then villain spells are one less to cast. Being able to play the Mob Lookout on 2, discard a villain, play nil on 3, get that villain back, and now all of your villains are one cheaper that quickly, I liked a lot.
Yeah, I agree. Nil was awkward at times if you didn't have something in the yard.
Yeah.
Okay. Some general cards to discuss. Shout out to you about Vineweaver Chariot. This is 2 mana for the 3/1 crew 2 vehicle. And when it enters, you can pay green. If you do, search your library for a basic land card, reveal it, put it into your hand, then shuffle. I'm less jazzed about it if you're not splashing. But if you're a green deck that wants to splash, and I do think a lot of green decks want to, it's a very good card.
Yeah, I'm less excited about vehicles in general in terms of the
web
I get
synergy.
To enable in web.
Yeah.
Because it's just like, if in web happens, great. But you don't need to work that hard for it.
Yes, I agree. Steel Web Surveyor is another one that impressed me that I thought was going to be quite bad. This is 2 mana for the 2/1 reach. When it enters, you can search your library for a basic land card, reveal it, shuffle, put that card on top. If you want to splash, this does it. And I think it's especially good at enabling that splash in a Bant Spiders deck, which I think is quite a real deck.
This next card, Zora Spider Fancier, single white 0/2 legendary. Whenever another creature you control enters, you gain a life. if it's a spider, put a plus and plus one counter on it. I didn't quite, like, I was just didn't realize how many spiders there were.
There's a billion spiders. Yeah. If you see Zora come down and you can kill it, you need to kill it. Because it's only in somebody's deck if it's very good in their deck.
Yeah. Again, that if you see a Zora, Shock looks really good.
Shock looks real good, yeah. Rouse a Swarm. This is a super real build around. 3 and a green enchantment. Enters, create a 2/1 green spider creature token with reach, then gain 1 life for each spider you control. Spiders you control get +1/+1 and can't be blocked by creatures with defenders. So you, for 4 mana, you get a 3/2 spider plus a minimum of gain a life. But oftentimes it's gain 3 life, like pump 2 other creatures. If you build your deck right, this should be an anthem for your team, and it is not very hard to get that card to be an anthem for your team. Another spider build around, Orus, Last of the Web Lords. This is 4G for an uncommon 3/5 with reach. At the beginning of combat on your turn, target spider you control gets +2/+2 until end of turn. Also great in spiders deck. It's a reason to pick spiders in green-white. That's why I say, like, if you're green-white, quit focusing on trying to turn on and web. And just pick spiders so that you can play these great spider build arounds. And it's almost like the dragon set. We're like, duh, dragons is great. Spider-Man set, duh. Like spiders, you know.
Matters. We all have great. We all have I don't know, PTSD from Innistrad, where it was like, duh, the werewolf set, worst color pair, worst creature type. Yeah.
Robotics Mastery up next, 4 and a blue, flash, enchant creature. Enchanted creature gets +2/+2. When it enters, make 2/1/1. Colorless robot artifact creature tokens with flying. I don't know about you, but this card has been absurd every time I've seen it cast.
This card is nuts. My buddy won. He was blue-white, I think, in our pre-release, and he had the Margot on the case, the 1-white-blue 1/1 double strike can't be blocked, and just like slapped a Robotics Mastery on it, had like the 1/1s as chumpers so his opponent couldn't race, and just like hit for six.
It's so good. Like, it's worth splashing good. Like, yeah. It's so good.
Well, and the curve of Serena Bargain Spinner, the 3 Azorius hybrid 3/2 has flying on your turn, searches up an aura or equipment. The curve of this on 4, Robotics Mastery on 5 is real good.
Yeah. A Restless Razorkin is the real deal as far as uncommon value engines. 2 and a red, 3/3 trample. Whenever you cast a spell mana value 4 or greater, you exile a top card of your library. If you do, you can play that card until you exile another card with this creature. This curving into the mana value 4 thing is really strong. Was very impressed with Restless Razorkin. That red green deck I alluded to had three of those Razorkins, and like, you just have to kill it on sight, or the opponent, or me in that case, runs away with the game.
Yeah.
Selesnya Archivist, almost always a clean 2/1. This is 3 and a green 3/3. When it enters, you either return a mana value 4 greater from your graveyard, or you exile target artifact or enchantment. Safety tip, if you accidentally like choose artifact or enchantment with this, like if you misclick on Arena, if you're the only one with an artifact or enchantment, you have to exile the artifact or enchantment. I did not do that, but my opponents did it a couple times. I got opponents forced to exile their own Oblivion Ring because you have
to choose that if you don't have a thing with
MV4. Yeah, you have to choose one if you don't have a thing with mana value 4 or greater in your graveyard, because you have to choose one and you don't have a target for the mana value 4 or greater thing. Hmm. So just watch out that you can be in a situation where you're forced to exile your own artifact or enchantment. And speaking of other safety tips, Generous Betty Ray is also templated very weirdly, which is 2 and a white for a 2/3 uncommon. And it says when Generous Betty Ray enters, put a +1/+1 counter on another target creature. So if you don't have a creature on your side, you have to put a +1/+1 counter on your opponent's creature.
That's a feel bad. Yeah. I want to shout out that with Selesnya Archivist, once I have that, Terrific Team Up goes way up in value. That's the 3 and a green, costs 2 less to cast if you control a permanent with mana value 4 or greater, and then 1 or 2 creatures you control get +1/+0, and they both punch another creature. Like, having a removal spell to get back with Archivist is big game, and especially a removal spell that costs 4 mana but really costs 2 mana because your Archivist is in play and makes it cheaper. It's real good combo.
Yeah. Surveil Lands.
Yeah, where are you at? Like, in terms of, I just wanted to check in on, do they matter? Like, did you activate these at all? Did you feel like you wanted to pick them? Were you picking them because of the activation or because they were fixing or what?
Never felt like I wanted to pick them unless I needed a splash. But also, like, it's so tough to spend picks on lands.
Yes.
If your draft isn't going smoothly from the get-go. I never saw one activated to surveil except from an opponent who is about to lose the game. I do think they're good for splashing. If they don't cost you anything, you want to pick them up, but it's really tough to pick them over playables because the playables are so good. There's not a lot of chaff in the format.
Yeah. And in terms of activating, like, I've definitely activated them. Like, games can get grindy, and those surveil activations can be helpful on either side of the battlefield, but ultimately not what, like, games really come down to.
Yeah.
Or not that it can be what those games come down to, but it's not ultimately what a large majority of games are going to come down to. The last card I wanted to check in on is Wisecrack. 2 red, instant, uncommon. Target creature deals damage equal to its power to itself. If it was attacking, it deals 2 damage to that creature's controller. Is this premium removal? I am currently saying no.
Probably. I mean, there's enough good cards where the toughness is higher than the power that it can be awkward, but it feels like destroy target non-legendary creature or something, like for 1 and a black. It's, I mean, when it's good, it's very good. I think it's closer to premium than not. I think you're taking it over the Deathflame Burst, the 2 red sorcery deal for.
Dang, okay.
Maybe not. That, I mean, I don't have tons of experience with it, but when I've cast it, it's been good. It's been good against me. I mean, that's all anecdotal.
Yeah, well, that's all we have right now.
That's all we got, baby. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess if I have to pick, if there's only 2 tiers, and it's like the tiers of removal are like the good ones and the rest, I guess I would put this in the good ones, but I feel like I like it less than Deathflame Burst.
Okay, cool.
But, and that's a card I just want to check in on. But that's a good way to frame it of like, it kills half the stuff. Still pretty good.
Any parting thoughts before we go? Any wrap-ups?
No, I'm excited. I mean, like, I guess I'm excited to see where I'm at in a week in terms of after I do, you know, we were able to do like, whatever, 8, 10 drafts.
You can, like, draft so much faster. Are they going to cost the same on Arena?
Like, I think they're
cheaper.
Yeah.
Okay, that's good because you can go through them in a hurry.
And so if we are going to do like 30 drafts this week, I'll be curious to see if, like, when we get back next week.
What the staying power is.
Yeah.
But that's the interesting thing, because I really want to draft this set. Like, if you had asked me that prior to playing with the cards on Early Access, I was going to be like, nah, I probably won't be drafting this set as much as normal. I feel very motivated to draft on Tuesday.
Yeah.
But that also worries me, because I don't really want Magic to turn into pick two draft. Do you know what I mean? And if it's good, and if it sells, and if they like it, I'm a little worried that's going to happen.
Well, maybe I'm being too optimistic, but the early returns on pre-releases for this set were quite low. It seemed like those were the reports. And yeah. I don't know, this is pure speculation, is that the pick two small nature of this set was a sort of born out of necessity,
right?
Yeah. Than anything that WotC or that R&D is like, and that's the direction we want to take things, is 180 card sets and pick two drafts.
Sure.
Maybe, yeah,
but I do really want to do pick two, and I want to podcast more about pick two drafts currently. Yeah, I'm excited. And I think if you are thinking about skipping the set, maybe you're just listening to the podcast, or I would encourage you to give it a fair shake, because like I said at the start of the episode, I was low. And then after 1 or 2 drafts with the cognitive dissonance, the card names, I was very low, and have since like come up quite a bit on it. And I'm really looking forward to drafting on Tuesday.
You still came back.
Still came back. All right. Love it. And on that note, thank you as always to Salty Pretzels for our intro and outro music. Make sure you give it a listen.
You can find all our content on our website at lordsoflimited.com. There is links to all our stuff. Our episode backlogs are there, our Twitch streams, our YouTube channel, our merch, our Patreon page, if you want to check that out, all available at lordsoflimited.com.
If you've got any feedback about the show or any questions, shoot us an email at lordsoflimited@gmail.com.
Thanks so much for listening, and we'll catch you next week for another episode of Lords of Limited.
Thanks, everybody. See you later.